T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It was the first day of the week, the first day of December, and the first legal recreational cannabis went on sale in Michigan. Outside Exclusive Provisioning, one of 3 shops licensed to sell, all located in Ann Arbor, I met a senior citizen who, along with her friend, wore colorful hats and were toting large buckets of soapy water while hundreds of people waited in line nearby.
Why the bubbles?
And where are you from?
I'm from WWDJ, News Radio 950.
Because this is a happy occasion, and there's nothing like bubbles for good, clean fun. They're effervescent. They're magical. And these are very, very special bubbles for this special day.
And for those who don't know, what is this special day?
When recreational marijuana becomes legal in the state of Michigan, like it should have been 100 years ago. It is kind of special. And if you come on over here and try out some of the product, you'll see why.
It's In Depth from WWJ News Radio 950. I'm Rob St. Mary. On this episode, we take a look at the road to marijuana legalization in Michigan. How did we get here? And what's next? In some ways, it seems fitting that Michigan's adult-use marijuana sales would start in Ann Arbor. Also in line outside of Exclusive on Sunday, I met an activist excited about what legalization could mean for Michigan.
I'm Jesse Riggs. I'm with the Michigan Medical Marijuana Association, and I'm here to buy marijuana legally.
Without a card?
Without a card, yes, for the first time in 10 years. I actually, I've been a patient, so buying marijuana legally is nothing new. However, without the card and just being able to walk into a store, this is a beautiful event. You know, like I was just telling everybody on our Facebook page, it's just, this is the culmination of years, decades of hard work, right? Shout out to Rainbow Farms. Remember Rainbow Farms? In honor of the people that were murdered there by the state police over marijuana. This is for them, man, right? And shout out to all the OGs who worked hard, like Adam Brooks and Michael Camorn and Rick Thompson and all these guys that have been busting their ass trying to make this happen for decades. You know, shout out and tip of the hat to them guys.
If you have a card, why is just being able to walk in off the street a better way to go?
Because now if I leave my card at home, I'm okay. I can stop somewhere. I can find a local spot, you know, and on in online and pull in, right? As long as I've got my ID, I'll be able to do that. Which I'm bad at because I tend to get busy. If I forget and my card lapses, I don't have to worry about the gaps. You know, I, for one, am a big believer in maintaining my medical marijuana card for legal protections. However, it's very convenient, right? And again, it's a celebration of the hard work so many people will put into this, man. So I'm here.
Is it, I see it kind of, maybe it could be a coincidence, maybe it's an ironic thing that it's here in Ann Arbor.
I hope it's by design, right? I'm ready to make this the Amsterdam of the Midwest. You know, Detroit said no, so Ann Arbor, this is the opportunity.
As Jesse Riggs talked about the political end in Ann Arbor by design, but to understand that, you have to go back a bit, like 50 years, to the start of the push for legalization in Michigan. And it all started with an arrest and how a member of the Beatles helped, maybe tangentially, to change Michigan's marijuana laws. It was December 1969 when poet, writer, activist, and manager for the Detroit Rockers, the MC5, John Sinclair, found himself on the wrong side of the law. Sinclair told me about it in a 2011 interview.
The alleged crime, or the crime, I gave an undercover police woman 2 joints at her request. She asked for 1, I gave her 2. It was like 3 days before Christmas. I thought I was just being nice. And then a month later, I was arrested with 55 other people in a Lightning Campus dope raid. And then I was charged under the sales of narcotics statute, which had a 20-year mandatory minimum sentence, life maximum. And I wanted to, this was my 3rd arrest for marijuana. And I wanted from the beginning to challenge the constitutionality of the marijuana laws in Michigan. And frankly, I couldn't find a lawyer who would do it because my second case, the lawyer was going to do it. And the more I thought of it, and he came to me and he said, you know, if we lose, you're going to get 20 years in prison. And I can't live with myself with that. I suggest that you take this plea and go do 6 months in the House of Correction. And it's the best we're going to do. So I did that. Then I got busted again. So I figured I was going to go through life getting busted every year because I was going to be smoking some weed. I knew that. And I wanted to challenge the constitutionality of the law, which I felt was really wrong, because first of all, marijuana is not a narcotic. And a penalty of 20 to life for giving somebody two joints is patently cruel and unusual punishment. Even getting 10 years for possession of two joints is cruel and unusual punishment, which is what I ended up convicted with. Well, we tried to raise the constitutional issue in Recorder's Court where the crime was being adjudicated. They passed it on to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals passed it on to the Michigan Supreme Court, and finally in 1969 they came with the ruling that we would have to come with a conviction in order for them to deal with these constitutional issues. So we went to Recorder's Court and stood trial and took the conviction. I didn't have a defense. We were trying to keep the record clear on the constitutional issue. Well, through all of this, I never expected to go to prison. I expected to take the conviction, be freed on appeal bond, and then let the case go through the court. Well, they wouldn't give me an appeal bond. And eventually, the Michigan Court of Appeals adjudicated that I was a threat to society and couldn't be allowed out on bond while this issue wound its way through the court. So I ended up serving 29 months as a maximum security prisoner in Michigan. And finally, my appeal went to the Supreme Court. It was argued in October of 1971. And by this time, we had decided, we were also lobbying the legislature to change the law. They had a bill the year before that went all the way to the end of the session, and then they ended up not voting on it. Well, this meant another year in prison for me, and I was not very happy about that. And so my overweening aim in 1971 was to make the legislature vote on the new on taking marijuana out of the narcotic statute.
And then some Yippie Peace activists and a former member of the biggest rock and roll band in the world got involved for a concert to highlight Sinclair's case in December 1971, after he had spent nearly 2 years in a maximum security prison in Michigan.
We had a friend named Peter Andrews who was working for the University of Michigan, trying to show them how to produce rock concerts so they could make some money off of this. And he somehow bamboozled them into giving us the Chrysler Arena for December 10th. And we were trying to put this show together. We were calling on everybody we knew. And finally, Jerry Rubin, he was coming, and he had become friends with John Lennon and Yoko Ono when they moved to New York. So he told them about my case. Took him a poem that Ed Sanders, who was a close friend of mine, had written. And Lennon was moved by this whole thing, and he wrote a song. And Jerry said, well, I'm going out to Ann Arbor on December 10th for this rally for Sinclair. Why don't you guys come with us? And so they decided that they would. And from that moment on, everything changed. The concert sold out in 8 minutes. I don't know. It was the fastest selling concert up to that point in Michigan history.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. It ain't fair, John Sinclair, in the step of breathing hell. Won't you care for...
And it was in all the papers, and then it just put the spotlight on my situation and on the legislature and on the issue. So on the 9th of December, the legislature voted to reclassify marijuana from a narcotic to a, quote, controlled substance. They reduced the penalty for sales from 20 to life to 4 years. They reduced the penalty for possession from 10 years to 1 year. And my attorneys, of course, immediately made an appeal, posted an appeal for bond on the grounds that I'd already served more time than the new crime was worth. Well, they didn't rule it on Friday. Friday we had the concert. Of course, it was broadcast live on WABX. And WTBS filmed the whole thing from start to finish. And everybody was, it was the focal point of everything in Michigan for that weekend. And on Monday, they granted my petition for appeal bond and let me out. So it had a magical ending. And it was quite an incredible thing, quite an incredible thing. All of a sudden, from being this demonized dope fiend and threat to society, I was the guy that John Lennon thought should be let out of prison, you know? And everybody liked John Lennon. He was with the Beatles, so it worked. It's a beautiful thing. Happiest day of my life, December 13th, 1971.
After St. Clair's release, there was some back and forth. But starting in 1971, the city of Ann Arbor passed an ordinance and eventually added it to the city charter in 1974, making it a $5 fine for marijuana possession. That ordinance, one of the first of its kind in the nation, paved the way for the Hash Bash, the annual pro-pot event in Ann Arbor every April. So when legal recreational sales started Sunday, December 1st, the first person to buy at Arbor's Wellness in Ann Arbor was John St. Clair. A little nod to his efforts over the years to see legalization become a reality. But before St. Clair could see that day, over 50 years after his advocacy started, there were many, many steps involved. First, Michigan voters said yes to marijuana once, over a decade ago. That was the Michigan Compassionate Care Initiative, which passed in 2008, at 63% of the voters saying yes to medical marijuana. Then last fall, November 2018, the effort to legalize marijuana for recreational adult use passed with 56% of the vote. The ballot measure also set up a regulator, the Marijuana Regulatory Agency, under the state's Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. Andrew Brisbow was hired for that job, and he spoke to WWJ about it.
So I've had a career in state government focused in licensing and regulation, and in the end, this is a regulatory program. I brought a lot of other staff with a lot of experience in state government and establishing and refining and making efficient processes in licensing and regulation. Certainly, I don't think any of us saw our career going in this direction, but I think everyone on our team at the MRA is very excited to be a part of it. It's sort of a rare opportunity in government employment to get to do something that's new and exciting. So I think we're all pretty honored to be a part of that and play a small role in establishing a baseline history in Michigan as to how this new industry is going to operate.
Then on October 1st, medical shops in Michigan were given the opportunity to apply for the first recreational sales licenses under the new system.
We'll process applications in the order they come in. We do have a 90-day time frame in which we have to make a decision on issuance or denial. So it's sort of important that we process them as we receive them. Doesn't leave us a lot of time to have sort of back and forth with any notices of deficiencies and corrections. So, you know, we're really encouraging applicants, particularly those that are new to the market that aren't already licensed on the medical side, to take advantage of our two-step process whereby they can submit their step one application to conduct the background investigation first, achieve a pre-qualification status, as we call it, before submitting the application for the facility itself. And that way they have that full 90-day time frame for us to review their facility plans, get it inspected and approved, and get them licensed. So for several of the licenses on the adult use side, you have to have been licensed on the medical side. So that's true for growers, for Class B and Class C, processors, secure transporters, and retailers. But for safety compliance facilities, that's open to anyone who wants to apply. And then the Class A grower, the micro business, those are available to Michigan residents as well. So not as many restrictions on those licenses. There's no state level cap. We're prohibited from setting a cap on the total number of licenses. However, municipalities can adopt ordinances to determine how they want facilities to be involved there, and they have the ability to cap the numbers. So that's more of a local control at the state level. We'll issue a license to everyone, but we can't issue a license to a facility if it's prohibited in the municipality.
First to apply and first to be granted was Exclusive Brands and Provisioning of Ann Arbor. Co-owner Omar Heshma talked to WWJ the day he was granted a license in October.
We actually have aggressively been working towards this side by side with the state to make sure that we have all the information we need to have had a solid application submitted in its entirety the first time. And we're very fortunate to be the first. That is something that we strive for. And we have an amazing executive vice president, Narmeen Jarus. She's our vice president of business development and head of social equity program, and she is on top of everything. So she's doing an amazing job, and everybody here at Exclusive is very dedicated to the industry and very pumped about putting a real alternative to medicine into the marketplace, if that's on the medical side or if that's recreational. Either way, we're very excited to be the first and, you know, to be a big part of the movement. The process to actually get all the recreational info together and gather, I mean, it was months, a lot of work involved. I think the application was like something like 100+ pages, or once submitted with, you know, all attachments. It was a lot of work, but, you know, we were dedicated to being the first. We were actually one of the first medical marijuana companies that were vertically integrated to get our medical license for grow, processing, and retail. So we've aggressively been working hard, and our whole team is very dedicated to staying on top of things. And we've been really in tune with the state, and they've been a big help to us. And, you know, we've been working side by side with them with the updates of the emergency rules. That's a new industry, so things kind of change every day, and we've just been part of the movement. We've been trying to stay on top of everything. So I think step one of the license really has to do with getting the ordinance to be concrete. We are pre-qualified, and that is for all of our divisions of our company, not just retail, but for grow and processing. So once the actual ordinance is concrete, then it will allow us to be able to put out the same state compliance tested products to the recreational market. Basically, any individuals who are of the age of 21 and older and have a valid driver's license. So currently it is a medical market, and all of the retailers that we do supply to are medical marijuana license establishments. And we're currently basically almost in every location, and we are hoping that with recreational, the ordinance gets established, and we'll have a good direction and hopefully a smooth transition, and, you know, no shortage of product, kind of like what's going on right now on the medical side is there is a shortage of product just based on super difficult testing through compliance that I believe is being worked on. We do have some compliance testing here that doesn't take places in other legal markets like California and Oregon. And I think through adjusting and realizing the shortage, some of those requirements will be relaxed or maybe even banish. And I'm looking forward to recreational and the caregiver market being part of recreational as well. We've been working with the state basically since the beginning, and kind of been a part of all the changes. And we're looking forward to continue working with the state to figure out the best way to expedite the process.
Although Heshma and Exclusive were ready to go, at the time, he still wasn't sure when that was going to be, since the campaigners, the regulators, and the lawmakers all said probably early 2020. Then, in early November, Andrew Brisbo and the Marijuana Regulatory Agency in Lansing decided to move up the sales date from sometime in 2020 to December 1st, 2019.
Well, I think we want to find a way to make that work. It's a challenge because I can't force my staff, their civil servants, to come in and work over the Thanksgiving weekend. That was a little bit of bad planning on our part. But, you know, we want to provide an opportunity for businesses to move ahead. You know, the will of the voters was to implement this program, and we're trying to do it as quickly and efficiently as we can.
That rule allowed for licensed medical provisioning centers, which had also received a state recreational license, to move half of their stock over to that adult use side for sale if the product had been sitting on the shelf for 30 days or longer. So on Sunday morning, December 1st, there were three stores ready to go, all of them in Ann Arbor. There were others that were licensed in the state of Michigan, but they were not yet ready to sell. So Ann Arbor became the first to allow licensed shops to start selling recreational marijuana, making Michigan the first state in the Midwest to legalize. But it would take some work by the shops as the days moved forward because they were expecting a line, as Al Morose of Arbor's Wellness in Ann Arbor told WWJ.
It's been very, very busy. We've doubled our staff at the shop. We are actively working with the state to make sure that all of our I's are dotted and T's are crossed. We have everything in order at this point. We are ready for the sales to begin on the 1st, and we're very excited. We've had a lot of interest, not only from Michigan residents, but from residents in the residing or nearby states as well. It's been a pretty exciting time for us. We're ready for it.
He said the cost was going to be a bit more on the recreational market, plus the state excise tax of 10% for recreational marijuana and Michigan's 6% sales tax.
And this is still being somewhat decided, but I do believe currently a medical pre-roll of around 1 gram is going to cost about $10 for a medical patient, but on the adult use market, it'll cost about $13. 100-milligram edible that costs around $20 on the medical market is probably going to cost around $22 to $23 on the adult use market. So basically, things are only going to go up a couple dollars from the medical pricing across the board. Nothing super dramatic, and a lot of this is also, you know, being affected by the fact that there is, and has been for the last year, a relative shortage on supply for medical patients, and now that we're opening up to an adult use market, there is expected to be a rather large shortage for the near future.
The building is pretty nondescript. It looks just like any other one in the office park. Black, painted brick, dark windows. The only thing that sets this one apart on Varsity Drive on the south end of Ann Arbor was the line on Sunday morning. People got there as early as 12 hours before the doors opened to be the first in line to buy adult-use cannabis in Michigan. With sales expected to start at 10 a.m. Sunday morning, people arrived early, and some came from not just across Michigan, but other states. Some in line were even willing to admit to me that they came from Ohio, and this the day after the Wolverines lost to the Buckeyes at the Big House just down the street. Jane, on the other hand, she wasn't from Ohio.
My name is Jane, and I'm from Pittsburgh, Michigan.
Okay, so
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. God, I'm not sorry. We had a late night. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
So you came? Were you just in town, or did you come here for this?
I was in town for Thanksgiving and stayed late for this event. So,
how long you been here this morning?
We got here, what time did we get here?
Quarter after eight.
We were planning on coming much earlier until the weather started getting really ugly, so we decided to hang back.
I mean, it sounds obvious, but why get in line? Why today?
Well, because it's the earliest day that you can buy recreational marijuana in Michigan, and I wanted to get here early.
Wanted to make history.
Yeah, make history.
So Pennsylvania doesn't have that, right?
Pennsylvania has medicinal marijuana, but it's a CBD form. Like, it's CBD oils, tinctures. There's no way you could smoke it there legally. I know they decriminalized it in Pittsburgh and I think Philadelphia, but other than that, you can't, like, buy, like, anything with THC there legally.
For those who may not get it and go, oh, well, can't you get it somewhere else? What makes it good about it being legal?
I feel like it's a lot safer because if you buy it on the street, you don't know what you're getting. And I know that there's a lot more drugs on the street now that are laced with fentanyl, and it's really scary. So I feel like buying here, at least it's dosed and properly made, you know it's safe.
Anything you want to add about today?
We're just excited. We're going to get our weed and go eat lunch and then go home and sleep. I'm here to buy edibles, so preferably weed gummies. My friend's here to buy stocking stuffers for Christmas, so that'll be really, really fun.
So it'll be a green Christmas.
It'll be a very green Christmas, true.
There will be tree.
By 9 a.m., the line outside of Exclusive was at least a quarter mile long. The staff members brought out coffee, cookies, cinnamon buns, noting that nothing was added to them, to keep people warm and fed as they waited in the cold, damp morning.
Cinnamon bun or cookies?
After the state's computer system in Lansing was ready to go, 10 a.m. came, the transfers happened, and the line started to move at Exclusive, slowly. One person I talked to arrived at 9 a.m. He didn't leave with his legally purchased marijuana until about 2 in the afternoon. The long line offered opportunities for some enterprising types to make a few bucks, like a driver from a local pizza shop who showed up selling large pepperoni and cheese pies for $10 a pop. And it was business opportunity, not pizza, pot, that brought Eric from Garden City out on a cold Sunday morning to stand in line.
Yeah, I've been studying it since around June of this year, trying to look into the investing side of it. I know this is something like the prohibition was in the 20s, and as it becomes more accepted and legal, the business side of things will just follow suit with it.
Have you seen anything yet in your research?
Most impressive companies like Aura out of Canada and that, they seem to be growing. They've got decent income. The dividends are changing. So I see this as being the next like .com thing or Amazon back in the 90s, where if you start now by maybe 2025, 2030, you'd probably be doing all right.
For you, when's it going to be that point where you go, okay, yeah, I wouldn't mind putting some money behind something?
I'm trying to plan for the start of the year. I want to see how this takes off between December 1st and January 1st, and then 2020, start putting some money into it.
What would be your considerations? Like, what would you look for?
Definitely growth, incomes over the different quarters. And then also, you know, you can't just look at the money side of things, see where the companies are at, what kind of people are in the area so that you know it might take off. And maybe not just look at people that are dispensaries that are selling, but also the cultivators. Go one step back.
As for this here, you know, coming out this morning, what was your thought, you know, why come out today?
I was surprised and also not surprised, though. You know, I figured we'd have some people, but not as much as I've seen out today. You can tell that everybody was looking forward to this. It's probably going to be good for Michigan's economy.
Just coming out for you, I mean, you got here when?
9 o'clock. Been here about 45 minutes now.
I mean, this line.
Definitely impressive. More than I thought there'd be. Somebody had told us that the people starting out had started last night with tents at 10 p.m. waiting for it. And, you know, you think Black Friday gets rough, but this is a whole different ballgame.
Green Sunday?
Green Sunday. We call it that.
And others have been thinking along similar lines. A recent cannabis business expo in Oakland County brought out people interested in investing and learning how they could take part in this new green rush.
One could say it was a gathering of more than a few budding cannabis entrepreneurs filling the Townsend Hotel. It was actually the largest collection of growers, processors, and provisioning center operators in the state. Among the panelists, Craig Aronoff is an attorney who specializes in cannabis.
We have opportunities for investments. We have opportunities for passive investors plus operators. And so what we're seeing is that from the evolution of the laws, that we're finally able to get companies with feet on the ground. And we're starting to see that in communities that embraced it early and those facilities are online. And then those that will follow will be coming in very soon thereafter.
Participants were also encouraged to take part in 4-minute speed networking sessions like speed dating to share their goods, services, and business plans. In Birmingham, John Hewitt, WWJ, News Radio 950.
And that green rush is part of the reason why the biggest city in Michigan, Detroit, has been holding off from moving forward on recreational sales for now. Under Michigan's rules, there's a provision to help with what they call social equity. In this case, helping cities that were affected by the war on drugs and prohibition to find ways to help and give opportunities to those communities and the people that live there, especially the poor and people of color, as a way to work within the new industry. How that social equity will play out and what it'll look like in Michigan and especially in Detroit still remains to be seen. But the Detroit City Council has said that it hopes to have something in place by spring of 2020. As for the first day in Ann Arbor, three stores, about 2,000 people bought, and that meant $221,000 in recreational adult-use cannabis sold on Sunday, the first day of sales in Michigan. As more shops start selling, the question of local control will remain a constant. Clinton Township is expected to have a local ballot question in the spring about allowing sales. Other communities, about 80% of them, have already opted out, banning the sale of recreational marijuana. Regardless, Andrew Brisbo with the Marijuana Regulatory Agency says his job in Lansing is to make sure the will of the voters goes forward while working with communities and businesses to create a well-regulated state market.
I think a lot of them just need a little more time to consider it. It's still a politically divisive issue. It's not an easy one to sell to the voters. And we've seen even when they pushed local ballot initiatives in communities that overwhelmingly supported the state initiative that they see different results when it comes to actually allowing facilities in those communities. I think the industry still has a certain stigma, yes. I think perceptions are starting to shift. I think as we see the level of professionalism in the industry, when you look at regulated facilities, I think that's starting to change some minds, though.
And with something like legalization, there's sure to be more involvement and conversation as Michiganders over the days ahead define exactly what cannabis will mean in their communities. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of In Depth from WWJ News Radio 950. I'm Rob St. Mary. Remember, the stories and conversations do not stop here. We've got you covered 24 hours a day, 7 days a week here at WWJ News Radio 950. You can listen online or on air. Remember, more information and the stories you hear are available to you anytime at WWJNewsRadio.com. Remember to subscribe to this show on the Radio.com app, iTunes, or wherever you get quality podcasts. And don't miss out on the latest updates and breaking stories from around the world and your neighborhood through our social media channels. Remember, you can always follow News Radio 950 at WWJ950 on Twitter. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Oh, and the sound of things to come?
Yeah, there's so much to learn. And already, just looking at what Michigan's been doing in the rulemaking process, it's very clear that they've been paying attention. Colorado struggled in the early, early days.
You'll hear all that and more next week right here on In Depth from WWJ News Radio 950. Thanks for taking the time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.